Looks like it's working. Some of us have been at this for a while, so that means we're kind of jaded. And when new folks show up to participate in this conversation, it's always fun. It's kind of exciting to create a, you know, bridge if one is possible. I can talk on all kinds of topics, and they're all made up on the spot, so I pretty much lie about everything and improvise about everything, like more or less anybody does. So maybe it's a good way, if you have some interests or segues for what you might like to speak about in context of what we do, I'm happy to reply to that. What do you got?
I got nothing.
Okay, that makes four of us.
We came completely just open to whatever came up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Similarly?
Yes.
Okay. All right, then. You got anything?
I always have something. It doesn't mean that I speak it per se.
All right. I understand.
You can say a bunch of things. One of the gifts, again, at this place is if I shift in the storytelling mode, it gets nipped pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If it's not relevant here and right now. You know, so maybe I'll just extend that note to how do we communicate about this as relevant as this moment that is ever changing? As soon as I comment about what I might notice, what kind of language would be fitting to an inquiry discussion?
Right.
That would be a question.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. You know, in so many call them spiritual endeavors, there's there's some kind of liturgy, right? Or there's some kind of commentary about the nature of reality or the nature of creation or how consciousness began, whether it was the great turtle or, you know, the Godhead of your choice, right? So in all of, you could say, the world's major and minor religions, you're finding a body of work, a body of belief, perhaps a body of superstition. Not to put that down or denigrate it at all, but that's what it is. It's a news report. And you're solicited to participate in that body of belief, whether the steeple looks like this, or the steeple looks like this, or the steeple looks like that. And if you are, good afternoon, if you are, let's say, indoctrinated, you know, as an innocent and sincere child in a hopefully a loving or not loving family, you figure out how to cope with, you know, the belief system, right, that you've been invited into. So this kind of conversation is a little more challenging in that there is no liturgy, there is no body of belief, there's no body of disbelief. So your, let's say, present experience is free to consider, contemplate, notice what the nature of experiencing itself is, without soliciting anyone to, you know, believe in a thing and then follow some kind of path of purification or a path of education where you can be ordained, right, in steps so that down the road you can be an authority and dictate that same body of work to the next person. So what might, you know, call it human life look like or feel like if we were encouraged, given the opportunity to dream, to sense, to feel, to discuss, hang out, without the burden of a belief system, without the burden of a destination, without the burden of sin, without the burden of imagining that God, he, she, it, or not at all, is other than you. Or that you're the product of anything. Let's say that you're not the product of the Big Bang, or you're not the product of your own birth, that your present experience is possibly absolutely acausal. And what appears in mind is a very rich, vast, complicated, fantastic body of metaphor. Language is a body of metaphor. It all is. If I say, the beautiful moon, you might look up and see, you know, a glowing disc in the sky, and you might have a sensation or a feeling associated with that view. And that feeling and sensation, that's real. The beautiful moon is a pointer. Right? So any word that we use to point to either an object or a sensation or an emotion or a storyline is a pointer, is a body of metaphor. Because actual experience is can we say, textural. And if you look carefully, if one is invited to look carefully at the nature of present experience through a textural lens, a felt lens, not a story, it becomes rather strange, perhaps even luscious. It transmutes at such an incredibly, you could say, rapid refresh that it's mind-boggling. So you could say our actual encounter with the textural nature of experiencing is mind-blowing beyond imagination. And we, in order to, tell a story, function at the office, make sure the kids are doing what they're doing, you know, communicate with the spouse, we use, you know, language and pointers and appointments and call them all kinds of practicalities to so-called navigate the day in a somewhat friendly or efficacious manner. But when it comes to, you could say, the bounty or the miracle or the promise of experiencing itself, none of those are relevant. It's not necessary to believe in a thing. It's not necessary to be under the thumb of a belief system, of a religious ideology. It's kind of fun, if not a little disarming, perhaps blasphemous, and that's a good thing, to sense the nature of, call it experiencing, in a completely innocent manner. So there's no grasping in the consciousness. There's no identification or reliance on what we call space or time. There's no future. There's only just what we can refer to as presence, which doesn't have a time stamp. Mind has a time stamp, right? Ruminating on the past, imagining what one is experiencing at present, planning, articulating a future is virtual, right? What's actual? What is this as it presents itself, which is not, let's say, reducible to thought? And as we speak in this vocabulary, right, using words as clumsily and carefully as we can, you could say a quality or a feeling tone is present that permits us to, what would you say, rest in presence without the burden, the inertia, the heresy of thought or story. What if, freedom were it possible, enlightenment were it possible, what if that were, can I be so bold, transcendent? We know ourselves through sensation, right? We know ourselves through activity and sensation. The data is pouring in through the five senses, mind and association and plans and what's next and optimizing our day if we can, you know, getting over a stressful situation, right? Managing the vicissitudes of living as best we can, seeking some kind of entertainment, affection, intimacy, perhaps even spiritual wonder. Right? So we're always curiously in motion. And you could say we're always under the influence of trying to bring our, call it sensuality, with us in the future.
Yeah.
Right? So we can feel differently or better or more exotically in the future. So we become a product of psychological time. And so we might think that freedom then is, what would you say, winning the lottery so that I didn't have, you know, financial concerns, finding a great medical practice so I didn't have health concerns, making amends in whatever way for everyone I've ever known so I don't have the burden of, you know, hurt feelings either as the perpetrator or as the recipient. I'm trying to clear the decks, right?
Yeah,
most believe winning the lottery. So, you know, as we're trying to clear the decks, if we are, and many people are, I mean, drinking a beer is, you know, clearing the deck. Watching your favorite TV show or binging on Game of Thrones is a kind of clearing the deck. You know, you're bringing your sensuality into a situation that somehow pleases you or nourishes you or maybe distracts you. What if that whole habit of mind and mood and behavior, it's a little odd and a little funny, were just to drop out? What then? How would it feel then if you could, let's say, gifted yourself with the permission to, what would you say, luxuriate in presence without distraction, without agenda?
I imagine it would feel much like you're a child again.
Yeah.
You don't have any experience to fall back on. It's all new.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this moment never happened before.
Right.
Now this one.
Right.
Now this one. So you could say we're streaming involuntarily in a pure novelty. And yet mind creates the imagination of continuity of self, the burden of idea, right? The burden of wound, the burden of future and expectation, and throttles or you could say confuses our capacity for novelty and innocence by dragging along this, right, burden of ideation, which drives, you could say, most humans absolutely insane. Some of us, you know, manage to get along kind of well with the way mind functions. Some of us at some point don't get along so well with it. It could be 3 years old, 13 years old, 30 years old, or, you know, 80 years old. And you can see how much, let's just say, uneasiness, disquietude is present in the culture, in the species, and how much, you know, worshipful effort is made and supplication is made to, you know, the God of your, you know, invocation to somehow work shit out for you.
Yeah.
So we have this bargaining relationship with the Lord, the all-powerful and omniscient, that, you know, is in a position to either condemn our behavior or forgive our behavior and hopefully set us up with what it is we feel we want or deserve. And the agnostics and the atheists, whoever they may be, you know, have their own way of, let's say, coping with the magnificence, the beauty, the mystery of life, without having to have, let's say, a supreme being in their lexicon.
Mm.
But even without having a supreme being in your lexicon, I would imagine that the sincere agnostic or the sincere atheist is dealing with the same bullshit that everyone's dealing with.
Well, nature, because God, in a sense, you know, it's got the same mechanisms.
Yes, you can create a supreme being out of nature, out of physics, out of anything you care to. If you want to create a supreme being, knock yourself out.
We notice what we create is constantly changing.
Yes.
And saying, well, where'd that come from? That's pretty neat. No, there it goes.
Well, this is you could say that if there's a dividing line, and there need not be one, if there were a dividing line, you could say one kind of person is sanguine with consciousness and the way life's going, and might not have, a depthful kind of curiosity. And then someone on the other spectrum is really, really crazily curious, compelled, right, to get to the bottom of the mystery of being. Tired of suffering, tired of fear, tired of superstition, tired of authority, and, you know, wants to bite into this.
Yeah. And then there's all that in between.
And then there's always everything in between, which is probably most.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is kind of a strange hybrid of I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I find it interesting that we're discussing this in a room that's a nursery school.
Yep, we've been at that for some time.
Slightly, which I think is an improvement.
Yeah, it's getting younger. Yeah, now it's a nursery school.
Like, funny. Yeah. Next, it will be babies.
Yeah, it's so appropriate, though.
Discussion. We'll be delivering babies here.
The neonatal ward, yeah. So there's, you know, in the you could say the philosophies that are, you could refer to them as non-dual philosophies, the Gnostic side of, you know, any branch of religion, the alchemical branch, right, of religious or human endeavor. It's a more, you know, subtle kind of discovery process. It's a different algorithm.
Smaller branches.
So we, you could say, borrow from, plagiarize, steal from a handful of, call them traditions that emphasize the nature of presence, the nature of consciousness, as a first-hand encounter, as a textual encounter, rather than right through the lens of mind or accomplishment or thinking, so that you begin to sense the quality of awareness as the call it the baseline of everything that appears in your experience. Like thinking, if you're thinking, and why not? Everyone's thinking. Who's listening to the thinking? Is it thinking listening to thinking? No, there's kind of a meta being, right, where you are processing, let's say, now spoken word, or you're processing the written word, or you're processing your own rumination.
Well, there's at least one.
At least. And most of us, you know, yeah, right. It's a courtroom full. Yeah, and everyone is court ordered to go somewhere. Yeah. So you're looking at, you know, you become curious about this, call it meta sense of awareness that is on the receiving end of phenomena arising, phenomena, you know, expressing, which includes, you know, the drama of a life, the drama of a community, the drama of a nation, the drama of the species. And how we conduct ourselves, what matters to us. Then you, of course, can look at, you know, political and socioeconomic situations and find, you know, frightening, tragic, right? Symptoms of species gone wild. Yeah. Species gone super wild. Yeah.
And speeding up.
Yeah, and you can notice that too, you know, as you consider the amount of news that's pouring in, the manipulation of the news that's pouring in, the parties that are creating and selling the news that's pouring in, you know, yeah, you can see things that kind of curiously accelerate. The number of, you know, call them religious or spiritual teachers across countless disciplines.
Not just them, everybody.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. 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 Everywhere. Yeah. So, where did the Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times.
Yeah.
I think we've nailed that.
I think you're right. So what if none of it's real?
Yes, what if none of it's real? And curiously, you know, you could get a little buzz out of the, right, the curiosity of none of it being real. And you could also see, well, it doesn't really matter whether it's real or it's not real.
Right.
You know, you keep looking at curious iterations of, let's just call it, you know, emptiness. Curious iterations of emptiness. So something shows up, and we create a scenario around experience, explanations and justifications and who did and said and didn't do and didn't say what and how I behaved and I'm in a drama or I'm not, or, right, this is ongoing. And we're looking at let's just say, a quality of consciousness or a quality of resting that is not engaged in the free-flowing nature of rumination. And to that quality of simplicity, real and unreal, you know, it's like, all right, yeah, maybe it's real, maybe it's not. But it's funny, you know, any emphasis that might be placed on, let's just call it the curious display of consciousness and phenomena, any emphasis is just going to be an idea.
Yeah.
It's going to be a metaphor. It's going to be a secondhand, you know, presumption or a secondhand accusation.
Experience doesn't need to know if it's real or not. Experience is experience.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, if I'm experiencing a dream and I don't realize it is one, and then I'm relieved that it is one, or I'm sad that it is
one. Like this one.
And I wish it had lasted. That thing I call experience hasn't been, change necessarily.
No.
It's just, it's experience on experience on experience.
Yeah.
In one sense.
Streaming novelty.
Like Lao Tzu, butterfly.
Yeah.
If you've ever heard of that.
Yeah, I've never, like, Lao Tzu would be dragon or something.
Yeah, you
can
throw a dragon in there.
It's good to throw a dragon in.
Yeah. You're real hot.
Can
you barbecue now?
So this frequency of meeting this way is, well, who knows what it is, really. You could say it's an invitation to put yourself down, not as an insult, as in relieve yourself of... you know, the myth of yourself.
Yeah.
Relieve yourself of the myth of yourself, of continuity, of responsibility, of implication, of what's going to happen to you or anyone or anything else next. So that there's a reinforcement then of you know, freewheeling curiosity. There's a mutative quality to awareness or attention when we become diffuse. In other words, a thought is not grabbed attention's interest, and right, we're running in memory. We're running in some kind of virtual universe in which we place ourselves as the important star of the show, right? So if attention becomes diffuse and more relaxed, then it has a, you know, a different orb-like nature. So it's not zip, it's, there's an ease that occurs.
Yeah.
That ease is not just, you know, mental, but you could say there's a possibility of emotional ease. Perhaps, you know, physical ease. So the one sense of individuation, right, relaxes.
Yeah.
and you know, you could say curious, curious phenomena begins to appear in your awareness that you might not have noticed before. And that, you could say, continues to rarefy, meaning that as this relaxation occurs, the reliance, the dependency relationship on phenomena also relaxes.
Mm-hmm.
As a person, as a body, as a being with belongings and obligations and responsibilities and stuff, I have a dependency relationship with phenomena. And I run that story, I run that stress to the grave. And some folks are magnificently successful doing that, whether celebrities or artists or athletes or business persons, you know. This is more kind of a blue-collar, you know, thing. Where a quality of attention, a quality of presence, is completely released from dependency on phenomena.
Kind of like the basement was released.
Yeah, like the basement. Right.
Space, right? Yeah, with more space, there's more relaxation.
Yes.
Or at least the ability to be.
Yes. And a quality of, call it absorption or immersion occurs.
Mm.
Yeah. Because awareness is unburdened of objects, unburdened of time. And you could say takes up residence in itself. And that's unspeakable. That's the game. That's what we do. You could call it doing.
That's what we do.
This curious awakening business is a contact sport. It requires a certain kind of intimacy. But it's not sensual intimacy. Right? It's not revealing secrets. Please. Everyone can just keep their secrets. The intimacy is more with that presence is felt, that experience is felt. That's its right principal interface.
Trusting nature.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah, if there's, going down this road, one will pass through call it the flames of mistrust. Yeah. Those deep flames of restlessness or irritability or mistrust, the kinds of things that, crank on us really hard and encourage us to micromanage and manipulate and over-dramatize and seek attention, right? And pursue security in, you could say, dysfunctional ways. So you have to, one has to pass through the fires of mistrust. Yeah. And, you know, mistrust is a, you could say, accompanies identification with body, identification with birth, identification with separation, identification with being at risk. Right? I'm physically at risk. I'm emotionally at risk. My stuff's at risk. My beliefs and sensitivities are at risk. Everything is at risk. And we become habituated to this stress and sublimate it consciously or otherwise. And then our, you know, persona gets becomes tainted by this sublimated mistrust. Which is a call it a lack of it, intimacy. Yeah. So moving through this kind of contemplative journey will, by its nature, you know, bring up all of these conscious and semi and subconscious, you know, sublimated, you know, call them belief systems or withholdings that, you know, interfere with absolute trust or absolute relaxation. Yeah. I mean, a lot of our distractions, conscious or otherwise, you could say, are engaged in not to feel that. Right? To avoid at all cost the profound way in which I might feel and be or imagine myself to be vulnerable. Yeah. And this is, you know, it passes through what you could call emotional or psychiatric or somatic vulnerability, but it leaves it far behind. that's its nature, you know. Call it a transhuman or transsentient sensitivity stops concerning itself with the implications of phenomena, or the micromanagement of phenomena, or personal strategies, or, you know, even the secret or co-creating, because there's no desire remaining. There's no insufficiency remaining that could possibly be ameliorated by, you know, a great hair day or a parking spot or the perfect lover. I mean, what? See, so you could say the greed, which accompanies, you know, let's just say common human experience, is another form of mistrust. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? The appetite for accumulating, for security, da 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 da. So as one moves through this journey, if they're, you know, invited, not by me, but by something far more magical than I am, invited to participate in this kind of a journey, then all of those, right, curious withholdings and powerful but subtle superstitions and belief systems are up for grabs. And we have to have the... might as well call it grace, right?
Yeah.
To pass through. Yeah.
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 Fascinating.
We are. Yeah, we are. Fascinating. I mean, this is fascinating. Yeah.
When boredom takes over,
well, who knows? I mean, anything can happen when boredom takes over, right? Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah, you could say boredom is, you know, like anything that accompanies default human consciousness, is associated with, you know, space-time individuation and a perceived lack of novelty. Yeah. Right? Yeah, and so the you could say a more gross level of consciousness, which is interested in attaining and creating and projects and da 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 da, is seeking novelty in an expressive or phenomenal way. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we have music and the arts and language. I mean, we have incredible, right? I mean, we're mystical beyond imagination, and you could say all of that is you know, the natural organic generation of human creativity. And there's subtler, so that the urgency for novelty or the urgency for expansivity is no longer relying on phenomena. Is no longer relying on projects or tools.
Boredom is external.
That's right.
Yeah.
The boredom is a kind of grief.
Yeah.
I was thinking of how it feels sometimes when you have a really nice gathering, a lot of folks, great time, everybody cleans up, last person leaves, and it's quiet. I mean, real quiet. And then there's a little bit of sadness.
Yeah.
You know, because of some really cool connecting ending.
Yes.
But again, all that's built in continuity itself.
Yes, it is. I mean,
the remembrance of how to.
Oh, right.
Instead of being where you are,
exactly.
You're looking back.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Always looking back or forward.
If there's nothing to compare it to, then the emotion would be relevant to what's happening now and not the comparison of now to some other recollection, let's say.
Yes.
Or wish.
Sure. Yeah. And again, it looks like there is a what's happening now. For you, then there's not.
Mm-hmm. It all gets defaulted through a framework. None of that would exist if you had no framework. It would all just be, I have no idea whether I was bored or not. I don't care.
You see, a lot of these kinds of questions, and they're certainly, legitimate, valid, with no question. But you can see they reflect to the quality of my experience, the quality of my emotion, right? And those are as luscious as those are, those are operating, at a level of the presumption of sensuality and the presumption of continuity and, what about me and, whether reality is my pal or not my pal, whether I'm lonely or not lonely. Right? So all of these things are flowing organically out of a sense of identity, of individuation, separation, that your experience is causal, that you are the body, that you are the mind, that you are your feelings. And I'm not...
situation you find
yourself
in, you found me intimately with you.
And I don't have any quarrel with it. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
It just is.
Yeah, but that's a way to hang. I'm not saying humans should hang a different way. Hang, this what we're, you could say, contemplating or emphasizing is, a different quality of subtlety or relationship encounter with the texture of being, the texture of experience, which does not need a story, and actually has nothing to put the story in. You see, if I'm, let's say I'm suffering because of one thing or another, and then I remind myself, be present, right? I'm just taking myself on another, ride, or giving myself another instruction about me feeling a certain way and identifying, let's say, a solution, one that might work 1,000 times and then stop working, on what I ought to do with or about myself so I can feel differently. And that is fantasy. I'm not saying one's emotion or sensation or body is fantasy. I mean, that's as real as, anything is.
It's a concept around.
It's the sense of continuity in the story and the anthropomorphization of experience that puts me right in the spotlight, which is always going to be accompanied by, risk of injury of some kind.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, you could say, the matrix of what is commonly accepted as human nature and giving it a second look, whether human nature is binding, whether mind is binding, whether the Big Bang is binding, whether your birth is binding. And what if it's not? What if there's a palpable, in-your-face encounter with the texture of experiencing, which has no continuity, which is not burdened by any authority whatsoever, which is not causal. Then, if you don't mind the street lingo, everyone can just fuck off in a nice way.
Not making a fuss about it.
No fuss needed. Yeah, because you inwardly, whatever that suggests, you're not the product of anything. You're not bound. Mm-hmm. If someone insults you, who knows? You might get hurt. You might insult them back. You might laugh it off. Right? Who knows? It's not like having an ideal behavior or figuring out how you're supposed to behave in the future if XYZ occurs. Yes. Oh, who cares? Who knows?
Yeah, ironically, a strong sense of self can be a strong reaction to your environment.
Absolutely.
Being sort of light in that matter. Not as a remedy. You remind us that we're looking for another antidote from this or a better this.
Well, sure.
Or just noticing, describing various textures of having how we have been present.
It gets strange.
It does get strange.
Anything referred to as past can only be a presently appearing elocution, presently appearing metaphor. Okay. So, is there a past? Well, I'm not really sure. Is there a future? Well, here's your future. Right? How many times over the beautiful arc of your life could you have predicted sitting here right now? Mm. So is this your future?
Yeah.
I don't really know. Maybe we don't have a future. Maybe we don't have a past. We certainly have incredible prowess for imagination and rumination and storytelling and anticipation and strategizing. I mean, we got that, going for us. But if we reconsider what the nature of presence is, we got, you could say, very little. It's always just this ongoing presentation of streaming novelty, which might have no implication at all. And then we busy ourselves with story and anticipation and, good cop, bad cop, and we whip ourselves into a frenzy. Over what? Things done poorly? Things anticipated to have a certain outcome? So we live in the crescendo, the excruciating crescendo of imagination, imagining that imagination actually has something to do with reality. And we miss reality completely. Now, I'm not saying there is a reality. You have, you could say, at your disposal the impossible to refuse present. Impossible to refuse. And yet if you feel it, what's it saying? Not a thing. Present. Well, it's not saying a damn thing. And yet it's completely full, fecund, with incredible sensorial invitation. As sound, as taste, as smell, as light, as et cetera, as rumination, as emotivity. It's just like, you got to be kidding me. This is incredible. And yet, it's not really saying a thing. It's completely innocent.
So there must be some natural attraction to be in a vehicle that can translate presence into all those textures. Sound, taste, touch, smell, feel. With or without the idea of a self that's organizing it all.
Well, that's the you could say that's the pin the tail on the donkey. That's the game plan.
Yeah, it's like, well, how did I or how did this find itself in a an interface unit.
Well, you know,
to be able to go. Wow.
You can find, you know, a million or perhaps 100 million or 7 billion parties that will be happy to respond to the how and the why and the wherefore.
Oh, that's a rhetorical.
Yeah.
I was expecting the answer to that.
Yeah.
But it is a curious thing that I kind of ponder right now.
Ponder is for free. You have, you know, you have an infinity of ponder at your disposal.
Isn't it the notion that I'm not in charge of anything? It's a very kind of enlightening notion. To the other side that shows itself on occasion, I'd like you to be in control of something. Controlling of my emotions, controlling my thoughts, controlling of my car, controlling of my routine or whatever. And then controlling the idea that I'm really laid back, and that's just, you know,
right,
not that important. Back and forth, to just it all dropping away, and then coming back just the next moment.
Well, see, again, coming back the next moment, right, it's not really possible. There is no coming back the next moment.
Yeah, you got me on the continuity thing.
Yeah, yeah. Because we anthropomorphize on a dime and create the imagination of continuity, where we've been, where we're going, and where we are now. But it's all blasphemy. It's none of it's true.
Yeah, but there's a calendar that tells me it's the 7th today, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be an 8 after the 7th. I'm actually just being the protagonist, right? Just for fun. I know what you're trying to say.
I wish I did.
I think I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that's right.
My presumed continuity.
That's right. Yeah, you can't. You can't really know what anyone's trying to say.
No.
You filter what anyone has said or is trying to say through your, let's say, through your experience, through your capacity for empathy or sympathy or imagination.
And every word can have a completely different meaning to
that's right.
each one of us.
That's right. You know, someone you love is in pain, right, or has an illness or has a thing, and you're not feeling the pain, you're not feeling the illness, you're not feeling the grumpiness or the irritability. You can't really empathize with the way that they're feeling, though you care for them and love them and don't want them to suffer. And if you're a principal caretaker and it's an ongoing thing, well, now you're suffering because of the fatigue and the burden of, you know, the difficulty of caring for humans that might be declining in health or whatever. The only thing you can know, the only thing you ever have is your experience. And that is, you know, rushing at you so quickly that the interpretive mechanism, the story told about my experience to myself in my own mind, is a total fantasy. And yet we become, you know, prideful, defensive of this fantasy. and xenophobic in every possible way. Yeah, really. Species gone wild. As awareness decouples from the inertia of rumination, the inertia of metaphor, really, I don't know, wild shit shows up. You could say there's a refresh of, you know, the beauty of you, the plenum of you. There's no content. One is not processing anything, including what we refer to as present experience. In order to process present experience, you have to freeze it in so that you can then tell yourself what you're feeling or what's happening or why it is. You have to freeze it in order to render it as a story.
Yeah.
And it's already 10,000 years ago. It's very curious, as you could say, you know, the typical human starts to have a different, a textural relationship with the luminosity of present experience without the, right, the burden of continuity, without the burden of implication. But that's a real kick-ass freedom. And it's not freedom from.
As the forest crumbled, he was running. Andres followed him, thinking it must be some great purpose in this valley. He's just so driven. And then he stops. And he goes, why'd you stop? I'm tired. I want to go home. Like, really? But you're like, you know, running for life, running for making a better world, running for... And it's kind of a metaphor for my own mind that runs and doesn't necessarily have to have a reason to run. It just runs.
Mind runs.
You know, and I don't have to really sweat over trying to find, you know, a causal connection to its streaming. You know, and then what do I have left? In a sense, I again, mind is just funny that way. Presence is more available. I'm not so busy with quote-unquote myself.
Well, presence is not more available.
I know. See, like I said, the language, that's why I asked about the language thing.
Well, you see, we presume that what this is or isn't is about us somehow. And we insist on, you know, interfacing with it through, you call it personal sensuality. And that's not what's happening. That's only imagined. There is no utility for this, but there needn't be. And there's no reference to oneself as a creature, as a being, with a gender or a color of skin or a socioeconomic class or a fantastic education or a miraculous... There's just no utility. Less than that. It's interesting. I mean, I know that our language is, in the way that we've been taught and the way that we use it, is always referring to, right, the disposition of self.
Yeah, so if you say, like, right now, there's nothing to do, you have to be, because this is doing a lot. Like,
yeah.
There's lights on, the air conditioning, you know, this is like...
Yeah, nothing to do...
The room is here, I don't know what it is.
Nothing to do refers to whom, exactly.
Yeah.
Transsentient sensitivity has no story.
You said transsentient, not transcendent, right? Transcendent.
Yeah.
Beyond,
they're interchangeable.
Beyond
sentience.
Sentience.
Yeah. To be bold, your present experience is transsentient, acausal. Not beholding to phenomenon.
So then it's even beyond a felt sense?
Yes.
That's a phraseology that you're points to.
Yes.
Something.
It indeed is beyond felt sense. So let's say, look at a hierarchy of a hierarchy of failure. at the extreme end, selfishness, you know, being self-consumed, manipulative, that, you know, starts to chill out, right? And then you become more subtle. So now you could say a more contemplative patina, right, starts to appear. So you can actually find yourself, let's say, silent for a while or still for a while and enjoying, right, like a relationship with contemplation as it may be present without mantra, right, without... repetitional phrases of any kind. And then you become more subtle, right? The perimeter or boundary field of what we call body starts to relax. So you're not defining yourself through sensation any longer. Mm-hmm. right? And then, right, the story of mind, the perceived sense of continuity, that starts to relax. So that's no longer binding. And you can discover that your present experience being acausal is absolutely transcendent. And to say that there's nothing to do or nowhere to go is like, well, that's for like humans.
Right.
You know, humans have nothing to do or stuff to do or someplace to go or not to go. This is like, hello? Hello? There's nothing home. Which does not negate the profundity of, right, phenomena appearing.
Right.
It's,
right.
It's like a dance. Of spacious and pointed, in a sense. Spacious being no point at all, and pointed is something shows up. But you, again, you can't measure its duration.
No.
It's just something showing up. Whether it's a strong sense of I and really being caught up in a big way, supposedly.
Yeah.
To completely unencumbered by any sense of I.
Yes.
Not that you were looking for it or anticipating it or planning it. It's just going from, wow, this is heavy, to no thought of self.
Emptiness
heavy,
is form.
Heavy.
Form is emptiness.
In a sense.
So there's a curious, non-paradoxical, concomitant expression of form in all the ways that you referred, and nothing at all in all the ways that that perhaps could be referred to, even though it's, you know, there's no language for it. So it's not like you are one thing at the exclusion of the other. Being or feeling or encountering a transcendent quality of unencumbered fascination does not interfere with the fact that you might get hungry or need to pee.
That's one word. I have nothing for nothing. You've got to have something. You want to be with me.
Billy Preston.
So anyhow, stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
I'm innocent.
So this, you could say, quality of encounter or discovery or the vocabulary that we use is for me refreshing. It's very egalitarian.
Yeah.
Nothing need be worshipped, because there is nothing outside or other than yourself. Not as the body, right? Yeah, there's just, oh my goodness, there's
Yeah, I recall a certain irritation about a healer and a healee kind of idea.
Yes.
Here's the healer with all this energy, this presence, this wisdom, and here's a person that seems to be broken.
Yes.
To the healer for healing, and there it is, the healer gives the healing, and then part of me goes, there's just one thing. And you, I know you'll challenge it, which is good. This is an old story. People cut me off in a second. There's only one thing, and that's healing in the sense of life force, but even healing is insufficient because there's no perception of broken. There's no perception of some great savior that's going to fix broken. And the proper openness and guidance that makes that person so great and radiant to fix the broken, which is all subject to change without prior notice. Again, continuity, identification.
Well,
come on, very
yeah, yourself. You become self-correcting. You graduate.
Kind of why I enjoy this. Like, I can regurgitate an old story and and see that there's a certain cleverness in what I thought I was coming to, which has another step to go in a way.
Well, that's the problem, you could say, with cleverness. It loves being clever. And so there's no end to the next iteration or the next implication of trying to outsmart oneself or everybody and anybody else. And, you know, the outsmarting can only happen, you know, through the means of, you know, phenomena. Oh, I have a better idea. I have a more spiritual idea.
That's what we do all day.
Yeah, that's what we do all day.
One-upping each other.
Yes.
And then ourselves, and then everyone else together. Yeah. And like collecting data, gathering data so we can get a little more one-up.
Yeah, we're good at it. A certain, you could say, approach or schools of realization will, you know, sell the aspirant all kinds of promises, lay your money down. And other, you could say, schools or approaches are, well, they're more dangerous because they will strip out from under you the conscious and hidden conditioning of convincing oneself of personal continuity, of implication, of dependency on phenomena. And then, so it takes the human agenda off the table. And, you know, admittedly, not that many folks are all that interested or attracted to or curious about what it might look like or feel like to take the human agenda, the human equation off the table. Because we're so conditioned for this to be about me and my experience and my sensuality and my stuff and my attention-seeking needs, my security and my future. So there's such a strong sense of suffering and disappointment, malnourishment that we have through the movement of time and thought. And this, you could say, this approach is, well, it's ameliorative of that.
Into ourselves we become.
I've seen it. I've seen it in the meditation hall. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the name aspirant is declaring a future.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because an aspirant is aspiring.
Yeah.
It's not content with presence. It's presence improved might get you where you're going, where you need to go, where you should go, where you could go, you're better than you are now, etc., etc.
Yes.
Or in the opposite direction, who you think you are, you just keep knocking pins down. You know, some people go in the other direction when they get tired of being an aspirin, they, you know, they're involved, they're knocking pins down, the pins being all the presumptuous teachers, leaders, healers, guides, wisdom books, directions, techniques, you know, more better, blah, blah, blah.
Pretty much blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And none of that ever kept my attention for very long. Curiosity, though, gets me looking, experiencing.
Present experiencing that, you know, ongoing degrees of subtlety and sensitivity. Erases rumination. Awareness without an object is felt, not emotionally, not even somatically. Awareness without an object is the, what would you call it, the baseline of availability. And if we're lucky, if we're interested, we become acquainted with that texture of awareness, the feeling of it. Say over time, if there were any, we get easily, seduced by mind again, seduced by the practicalities of a world, the sensuality of the world. There's no quarrel with that. A good chess game, a good cup of coffee, whatever it is. And yet this quality of the textural nature of awareness without object is always ongoingly present. On an arc or a journey of yogic discovery, curiously we find ourselves becoming more familiar, more trusting of resting in objectless awareness. And so we do. And we can have breakfast and have a conversation while that texture is still present. You know, if you go to the supermarket or you talk to your bank teller about objectless awareness, you might get a funny look, you know. So
you can't get stretched in front of the bank teller.
Yeah, you can't even do yoga stretching in the lobby, right?
Doing nothing.
Sorry, nothing.
I was wondering how, like an accountant might handle inquiry.
Yeah, how might an accountant handle it? I don't know.
The future, no measuring.
Yeah.
No amounts.
Right. Oh, I don't have to. We'll see if an accountant shows up someday, and we'll ask them.
CPA. Here's your answer. The one on the page. No, actually, I correct that. It's zero.
Thank you, by your code.
Yeah.
What's correcting?
It would just keep it from zero to one. Right.
Right.
From point to space. Back to point to space. Like Isaac Bentov's pendulum. I don't know if you remember that guy. Where's my colleague? Stalking the wild pendulum. It's kind of a metaphor for things being in existence. As it moves, you see it, and then as it hits the point where it starts going the other direction, it ceases to be for an instant. And then it comes into existence as there's movement of some kind. And it was like, wow, that's kind of cool. I wish it would stop me every time.
I'll let you self-correct.
I love this process. I really do. Meditation was my thing central for a long, long time. And I could entertain myself in meditation. And be pretty busy inside. If I let this out like I do, I'm dialogue, I can catch myself pretty quickly in this framework where I'm entertaining myself for the moment with various story and records and things like that. And I've seen people that really enjoy doing that come here and appreciate that they can't do that here very long or very often. Literally a storyteller. He was not, he had not once gone into a storytelling mood. So no utility and purpose, yet somehow I would use the word enjoyment, I'd use the word belief, I'd use the word fun, curious.
But once something like that becomes sensually engaging, then the rubric of self is reinvented. Is it fun? Need it be?
There was no preconception of it being fun.
Yeah.
But I guess, admittedly, there was an afterthought.
That's right.
And then a desire to verbalize that.
Yes, that's right. Self is metabolic waste.
Thank you. So you're saying it's a bunch of gas?
That's right.
Okay, well, make good use of it then.
Yeah.
Back to the
you can see how quickly is not even the word, a sense of self congeals around the slightest suggestion, the slightest hint. You see, to be yogic about it, if awareness finds an object and becomes enamored or fascinated with that object, there's self, with no delay. You find the slightest facet of interest, it's an object. And by virtue of it being an object, so are you. The perception of it is also an object. That's self. This is long before I become an insufferable asshole.
Yeah.
Self is very subtle. Long before my persona is either enjoyed or not enjoyed by whomever. If awareness finds an object and becomes enamored of that object, then the perceiving is also instantaneously objectified, and then sense of self or individuation follows, and there is no delay. That's how quick it is, without delay. It does not take time, as in clock time, or phenomenal time, or cosmic time, for self to ignite. There is no delay. That's how quick it is. And then when we have an idea, and want to espouse, which we're always welcome to do, that's so downstream. Right?
So now I'm reduced to affluent.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you and everybody else, I don't want to single you out, as a particular floater.
Yeah. I prefer to be a babbling brook, so if I am relegated to such.
You're doing it well. See, when we look yogically at the nature of, call it awareness, attention, experience, objects found, sentiment, right, the genesis of self, it's so incredible. It's so fascinating. It's so subtle, remarkably subtle, and has nothing to do with one's, call it persona. How is it that you wear a persona? How did you end up being you? By virtue of nature and nurture and DNA? And let's say we have free will. Well, if you have free will, well, then feel differently. Be different. Change everything about yourself and have completely new sentiments and new philosophies and new politics. And then if you don't like that, 2 minutes later, change it again because you have free will. But aren't we curiously ourselves and proud of ourselves and repeatedly ourselves and dogmatically defensive, if not violent, when we defend ourselves? It's unbelievable. And yet I'll insist on free will. But I'm a jackass to the grave. It just doesn't compute. Yeah, no. Why might it be difficult or challenging, a puzzle, for, let's just call it the mystery of awareness, to uncouple, to decouple from objects? Look how quickly objects appear, and how the fascination occurs involuntarily. Fascination with an object found occurs involuntarily. There's no choice involved. There's no decision involved. There's no story associated with it. An object found in attention happens involuntarily, and that object found and enjoyed becomes self quicker than you can say self. There is no delay. And so a ruminating mind is like, more or less my best friend. I may be incarcerated by it. I may be sick and tired of it, of self, but I have no idea how to get out.
It's like the mind is a chameleon. At times. Or perpetually. As it activates.
See, if you find anything, the most subtle of philosophical discoveries, the most subtle of revelations, bam, it's an object. And by finding it, then perception also objectifies. And self, sense of individuation, sense of self, blooms, blossoms like bad algae on a beach, faster than you can say boo. Now, when encountering, let's just call it the possibilities of life enhancement, most of the time, we're busy already being insufferable symptoms of this magic and then wanting to figure out how I can feel better about shit. Which doesn't work, or it works for a time and then it fails. You go from teacher and program and teacher and program and diet to diet and, purification ritual to the next. I got like a library full of all the things that I've accomplished and all the people I've talked to and all the people that have thrown me out because I'm such a dick, This completely flatlines. All of that, any of that. Because the attention is no longer interested in the myth of self, the myth of continuity, and what I should or will do about my experience, sensually or otherwise. It completely relaxed from the genesis of self. Because it doesn't find an object. But you can still pick up a fork, cut your steak, and enjoy it. your mock vegan turkey burger. Any questions?
Supremely disinterested in the outcome of something.
Yes.
There's no offer.
That's right. Supreme disinterest is objectless awareness.
Yeah, when I'm able to do that,
it's
an amazing phenomenon.
Yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't have an offer.
Yeah. That's how this flies.
Yeah.
You get a taste of that, and you're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
It's clear as day. Freedom from self, freedom from continuity, freedom from implication, freedom from phenomena is like, and you notice it.
Yes.
Yes, please. And you could say that. You know, encounter, which is unsought and acausal and has nothing to do with anything that you did or any supplication at all. It just shows up. And that experience, you know, whether we have it at 2 years old or whenever we have it, is going to, we're going to remember it somehow. We're going to remember it. We're going to know that that occurred. We might not have words or vocabulary. We might not have anyone to tell it too, for decades. But we will not forget. And that, you know, lovely encounter, that invitation into emptiness, will stalk you. It does. It stalks you. Mm-hmm. And as we, you know, mature in our so-called adulthood, and a certain kind of availability or ease occurs, if we're lucky, it occurs, and we become more curious about that, call it event or events, and we find ourselves leaning into it with more fervor, with more humor than we did before. That's how this flies. It solicits you. You might forget it for who knows, and then it comes back. This little salon is a halfway house, you know, for folks that feel compelled to feel this or kick it around, talk about it. Yeah, this is a salon, the halfway house. Yeah. There's no ankle bracelet. You're free to come and go. There's the modest group of inmates I like to refer to us as that meet frequently each week, which is kind of curious in, you know, Doylestown and environs, to have found a handful of people that are actually interested and curious and having this kind of conversation on a frequent basis. It's just too strange for words. But some years ago, I think it's six years ago or something, Dave and I were enjoying what was called the Pebble Hill Sangha for a while, meditating. It was a Thich Nhat Hanh-influenced, you know, meditation group. And it morphed like things do. Slowly it became, you know, more a format like this. and the people, many people that were fond of the old style of hanging out, you know, dispersed. So we do this.
And then coagulated.
Yeah, dispersed and coagulated, that's right.
Coincidentally, the church only had a spare time on Thursday. And so coincidentally, some Thursdays I'm meditating in the building while this is happening.
Yeah.
So a little bilocation is in order.
Dave facilitates the meditation group.
And I've invited folks to, if they're willing and able. But what a challenge, I think.
Yeah.
So you want to challenge yourself and you frame with reference. That self-reference. This would be a really good place to toss around whatever shows up.
Yeah.
And see where this is, see how seeing can be effective. You can say.
Oh, I just had to throw this out. I'm listening to this and I can remember having conversations like this many years ago around a campfire smoking pot. It was perfect.
We do that.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, we still do that.
Yeah. I'm there.
Okay. You're in.
That's actually our favorite, one of our favorite pastures. My.
Yeah. Yeah. Campfire, ganja. Yeah, it's good.
Usually doing that and eating.
Well, I'm
still
said I should be eating at that point.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
We combine all three.
There's copious eating, fire, and enough intoxicants to suit your imagination.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Well, it's good to see that ritual come back around, huh? Yeah. It's been a while.
Well, this pondering thing has really taken off.
Yeah. That's right. Ah, the good old days, they're back.
You and perspective, whatever it is you're doing, always looks really boring. Really boring.
Well, thank you for coming and being patient with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I like the vibe that you recreate the space here.